Silverdale, is that you?
It is. I was just saying, you're not coming through. I can't hear you on my computer.
Oh. Marvette, can you hear us on our microphone? Okay.
Well, I could just talk louder. I could project. You what? You hear?
I don't know what to do.
Boy, Jim H. says it sounds okay, perfect. I'm going to go ahead and refresh, I think.
Okay.
All right.
Everything sounds good except you, Silverdale.
Okay.
At least that's what we're getting on this end.
Well, I can hear over the phone just fine.
Can you hear
Why do they say that you sound like a corporate robot?
But can you hear yourself talk? Or think? All this is on the recording, you guys. This is no fair.
Okay. Well, you didn't start. You didn't open the class
I
yet.
Didn't open the class. I'm opening the class now. It's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock, and this is the class on The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. We've been working our way through this book for the last several months. And we meet each Wednesday at 7 o'clock to penetrate the information that's there and to see where the author is taking us and what information he's providing in our spiritual work. We've gone through a number of other books, including The Human Biological Machine and Practical Work on Self, Life in the Labyrinth, and also The Joy of Sacrifice. And it is my position, and this is not in the book and it's not reflected by anybody but me, and that this particular book, I'm saying, is the third segment of the series, whereas HBM, Life in the Labyrinth are the first two. Mm-hmm. This then puts us right in the middle of the Bardos. And even though there's a lot of technical material, and particularly in this chapter 12, which is on octaves, there's a lot of technical material, we will see, it'll be evidence to us toward the end of the chapter, which we will have this week and one more week, that the intention of the author, I think, is to give us methodology and technique to assist us in our ability to navigate and to navigate in the high, really in the higher dimensions, no question about it. The purpose is once we've awakened the machine and we work extensively with the concept of how to awaken the machine and what its mechanicality is, and then we learn more about being in the waking state, now it's how do we then navigate? How do we then begin to navigate? And it's by the use of energetics. This is a fascinating chapter, and I have to thank Silverdale for challenging me to want to penetrate the material. George, I did get that book, by the way, from your friend, Stefan, and I've begun to read through it, and he has a very simple approach to it in many ways, and it's been very helpful. Probably by the time, next time you and I visit, I'll have that under my belt. But, chapter 12 is a very difficult chapter. The purpose of chapter 12, Ivan, why don't you read the header real quick?
Read the header again.
And just get us started.
From page, what is it? 117, chapter 12, octaves. Prayer absolute is in the form of an objective nine-stepped octave, which includes two intentional retardations introduced by internal activities of the awakened biological machine. The passage from one scale to another is what those steeped in scientific superstition call magic.
And in a certain way, so let's dissect that a little bit before you go off of it, okay?
Yeah.
So it says that has something to say about this thing called prayer absolute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's something about performing prayer absolute, and it says that we are going to, once you do that, then what? Then, then something happens called passage
from one scale to another. Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we're looking for. And I challenge you, first of all, for this week, we actually had a an exercise. And I don't know, did you do the exercise, Ivan?
I didn't hear of this. I was
You weren't here
gone.
Last week?
No, and I was gone until Monday.
Well, we actually didn't notice. But
yeah, I'm sure you. I'm glad you kept on speaking to me.
I guess.
While I wasn't here.
Yeah, it worked really well. It looks different, though.
Oh, yeah. The response was similar, I'm sure.
I see. But anyway, it's like, so this idea of moving from one scale to another, this is the challenge right now, even though we had a specific exercise. The challenge is now, notice the change in scale from when you came in the door. You came in the door tonight, and you sat down, and you began this process. There is and will be and is already beginning to be a change of scale, right? So if that's true, well, what's happening? And that's part of what Chapter 12 is about, just to help us observe that change of scale. I once mentioned to somebody who was in a fourth-way school, and she asked me, she happened to be an MD, and she says, well, what do you mean? What are you doing? I says, well, we're practicing a different form of self-observation. And blithely says, on that. You mean you're just on that? I maintain that self-observation never ends until you have the ultimate breakthrough. You are always in that process. The fact is that it gets more and more subtle, and we are dealing with a level of subtlety as is simul temporum, that we were speaking a few weeks ago, and the point is that we were debating certain issues and things like that, and I realized that we are discussing subtleties of growth that are rarely talked about. And you'll notice this if you get into conversation with other fellow voyagers who may be in a different process, and you'll see their eyes will just lighten up and they'll go, my gosh. So that's the gift that's offered to us. So we're working on The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. We're on Chapter 12. It's very slow going in these last few chapters. Okay, like I said, this is the third evening of working on Chapter 12, and we'll have one more. So we've gone through three, and then we'll do a fourth. Okay? All right. I don't want to quite get into the exercise part yet. I don't know if anybody had a chance to do it, but right now, Dan, why don't you ask, and then if it's the case, line a couple of up.
And David, I am here tonight.
Yes, you are. Hi, Susan.
Hi, guys.
Yeah. Boy, your voice sounds wonderful.
Yeah, so I'm here.
Good. Welcome. But I'm going to go ahead and go back into the chapter. We're on page 122 at the second full paragraph. And we're going to read a few paragraphs there and see how, if we can actually get totally lost and find our way back out of it. It must be understood that movement within the octave is not linear from note to note, but through the influence of tensions. What does that mean to you? I think it's critical to understand that passage. Things don't move linearly. It's just as simple as that. if you actually open your eyes, you look at a process, I don't care what it is. I happen to be a business consultant. I work in business all the time. And things don't get done in a linear fashion. They don't. You want to think that's the case. Why do we want to think that? Because we're not touching against chaos. That's why. The fear of the unknown and that moment of yikesness that is really the breath of chaos breathing down our neck. But that's also born out of that is creativity. That is where creativity is born. So it doesn't move in a linear fashion, but rather it moves, what is it again, Ivan? Moves
according to tensions.
Tensions? What is that? What tensions? Somebody help me here. MA must be able to.
If I'm doing an activity, Dan says, it isn't necessarily that what I'm doing is in a logical sequence.
Well, and Jim H. says ebb and flow.
In relation to what feels more urgent or more important at the time.
And as Jim H. says, ebb and flow.
Ebb and flow.
Okay, so.
Without electrical fields.
That's the idea. MA is saying then the sensing of electrical fields. There are some people I know that's how they operate in the world all the time. And some of those individuals think that that's a decrement. I happen to think it's a high-level skill, but I'm not trying to sell that one at the moment. So, go ahead.
Tell that for a moment. So, go ahead.
David, could it be that tensions equals resistance?
Yes. I'm going to leave it at there because
okay. We're
about four paragraphs away from getting to that one. Okay?
All right.
So, if it... All that we're trying to do is place in our, as I jokingly said to Ivan a little earlier, place in our psyche, in a sense, the information. We don't understand it. This is deep philosophy, as Silverdale has begun to try to introduce to us on the website, wingsofchaos.com. The principles involved in this are vast and they're huge. Nevertheless, it'll settle in somewhere.
Yeah, did you want to bring up this discussion that was going on in those posts about the Enneagram?
I'm not really ready to get into a discussion of the Enneagram at the moment.
Yeah.
But we'll save that for, I want you to comment on that. Okay, but a little bit later, probably. But I do want to say what Lost Horizon posted on that site. And he says, I want to emphasize something. He says, you know, he doesn't just say, he's not going to tell us something, he's going to emphasize it.
Okay.
Which I am appreciative of. I want to emphasize something which perhaps everyone now feels, he says. The principle of the octave is something that is experiential. It is necessary that the theory of it be introduced to our thinking, but the thinking alone cannot comprehend it. What are the first three parts of the prayer absolute again? Does anybody remember?
In motion.
So somebody says
bowing.
In motion, bowing. And the second one? With heart. Alive. Is Aria around? Yeah, she remembers that one. And then the third one is?
With clear mind.
Do you remember? It's with clear mind. Our presence comes to thee. And so it's That sounds a little bit like something that my body does, right? And then I have a feeling about it, and then I clarity. So those three principles, when they come together, and what was the term you used, Silverdale, when they are, those lower three centrums are in, when
point
they're harmonized.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Oh, that's right. When they're in well, let's say I might have missed what you were looking for.
Yeah, no, but that's it. When those three are harmonized, something else automatically happens.
Oh, the present is, our presence is automatically activated.
Okay, so listen to this. So our job is to allow ourselves to experience this information at the same time taking the data in as theory.
Mm-hmm.
All right? We are a three-centered centrum being. We can recognize that we have a body and it has a physical manifestation. We clearly recognize and stand at the altar of our emotions over and over again, and others stand at the temple of the clear mind. But it's all three of those. Those are the centrums that work in us. And when those are harmonized in a certain way, boom, then the essential self, the other electrical body with which we are blessed with, comes forth. Okay? So the electrical energy doesn't move linearly. It actually moves in a circle. We can see that the tension between me and Fa is momentarily transcended by artificially adding the force of a whole, even smaller octave, which forms a bridge, without which we would fall back into the beginning of the octave, forced to repeat the most rudimentary beginnings. This is being repeated in this chapter over and over and over again. Do we get this? Do we get this, what the author is telling us here? A good sense of it. What he's saying is that if we leave things to the way in which they are, the mechanicality will operate that way. That's exactly right, Janet. It will just continue back to where you started.
I'm sorry, I fell asleep.
Yeah, some people weren't able to pay attention that long. It was almost a full minute.
What?
Talking about that
in the category of if you ain't got the do re mi.
That's right. So, but it's when you begin to recognize this moment of tension. Simon is trying to introduce this term called resistance. So something is occurring there. The key is, can we sense it? Can we sense that momentary retardation, it's called?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Did you put up the notice about the... Okay. So Tamara is bringing up the question. She says, wait a minute, how can you sense if these three centrums aren't already somehow together? Of course that's the correct answer. Yes, they must be. How do you do that? You awaken the machine. Do we remember how to awaken the machine? We can go back and read the HBM again, but it's you place your essential attention on the machine in any way you're able to, whether it's a fleeting emotion, it's a chain of thought that rushes through, or it's a physical attribute that you have. And once you place your attention on that, then the essential self is allowed to come through because the force of ego of the machine is diminished at that time. So now, Pay attention to the quality of the space now. Right? So did we achieve what it was saying a little bit in the first paragraph that you read, Ivan? So all I'm doing is just pointing, I'm pointing a finger at different moments when it occurs so that we can participate in that as a very subtle form of self-observation. Because it's your observation that's critical here. I know people are doing all kinds of different work in the orbs that they're running, and during the Easter workshop there was different techniques and things like that. The key is that you, your participation in it, you are the data point. And that's what it, that's what we're talking about here. It's experiential. We can call this first
comments.
Okay, go ahead, Susan.
Let's see, Silverdale is saying, if the essential self is an electrical, if the essential self is an electrical field impinging on denser field of the HBM, then the sensation of movement of the octave is not linear, but functions in accordance with the inner dynamic of the Enneagram.
Okay.
Did you get that?
I did get it. So, did you hear it? Yeah. So what Silverdale is saying to us there is that there's a different modality of energy movement at that time. I'm not sure if we're going to have the time to get into the way those that energy moves, but if you get, and I'm drawing a blank on the name of the book right now, George, but Stephen Sewell's book.
Accomplish the Impossible.
Accomplish the Impossible, it, I think, is the clearest of the four books I now have on the Enneagram, how the energy moves. Once you're in that position where it goes from 1-4, for instance, and how the energy starts, that's exactly right, Jen. And it's and that's a tension that it's working with. And that is the form, that's the flow of energy.
See, I have a, go ahead. Just a footnote for you, David, which is interesting. On the line of this idea of the experience, of the experiencer, you know, my experience as I've experienced it. I mean, there was an exercise that EJ did years ago related to the movements that was set up on the pattern of the Enneagram, and you would do it in a line of people, and it had to do with following that set of tensions around the Enneagram. And, you know, without going into the, you know, there being that 1-4-2-6, you know, whatever that is, but that was the pattern. But as I recall, you know, again, this is my speculation, you know, EJ, he never would say explicitly that you're supposed to experience anything or get anything out of this exercise, that this is the end point. You know what I mean? He just has you do the exercise. And but, you know, that was certainly, that was actually a way of experiencing this mathematical formula, something very conceptual. You would experience it in your body. You know, you would be walking it. And,
in about five pages, and I'm not even sure we're going to get there tonight, EJ actually talks about what he's doing here in this chapter.
Well,
go ahead,
we'll get to that.
Susan, do you want to read those comments?
Yes. Let's see. Jim H. is saying the essential self starts out as a separate entity attached to the HBM, going to feel like a foreign body moving randomly.
Okay.
Simon says the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
Ah, very well put.
Price of freedom
for
is
that,
eternal vigilance.
Simon, take the extra effort to go post that on the website.
It's, that follows David's comment about self-observation.
You bet it does.
I would say.
And it talks about something that we talked about briefly at dinner tonight, was that this is the work, guys. This is not a vacation. This isn't something. The work means that you are always working. Okay? And what was the phrase Simon used?
Eternal vigilance.
Eternal vigilance. My goodness, mister. You got to go put that up there. That's poetic in its highest sense. So it's this eternal vigilance that we must gird ourselves to perform. It's not when we have to. It's not like, oh, the teacher's around or these important guys are around. I'll pay attention. I'll observe myself. No.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy.
Right.
That's easy. The hard stuff is when you're you close the door to your apartment, you lean against the door, and you go, here, I can go to sleep now. And then, but even then, at those moments, in the worst moment of whatever you think you're doing, the worst, which isn't, then that's when you inject this eternal vigilance. And then you can begin to sense and taste your own freedom, not somebody else that injects, you know, because they have more energy that day and they inject it and suddenly you have to feel this high thing and you go, that's freedom. No, that's that experience at that moment. Freedom is when you can walk on your own 2 feet and you have that same sensing and you're walking through the bloody office supply store. Okay? Can you have the same momentary sensation? And to loop back into the chapter, if you sense the flow of energy through that Enneagram, you will see that. And if you can key into that and inject that energetic shock at that moment, then something new can happen at that time. Okay?
And there's an earlier comment from Pianjo. He said, unwatched monkeys remain monkeys.
There you go. That's it. So, and we are that monkey. We are that monkey. Don't you get it? We are placed on this planet. You think, you know, it's just Earth, whatever. Whatever. It isn't. This is a holy event that occurred. We are on this planet that is called Earth. What is our purpose here? What is the opportunity here? If we remain as unobserved monkeys, that is our gift back to us because it works just fine. It works just fine. Well put. Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome.
I'm going to actually jump ahead a paragraph, okay? We're talking about notes and whole notes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But for purposes of this, it's good to read that, but I'm just going to use that as energetic injections, intentional energetics at that point. I'm going to jump to the paragraph, the whole paragraph at page 123. And just a second, Emma. It is, in this way, it is possible to understand the function and methods of work of an angelic assembly, okay, which is to say the assembly of a working group of human beings attempting to bring their activities into direct corresponding with an angelic assembly in a higher dimension for the purpose of the production of a temporary, even momentary, missing note in the higher octave. Now, so here's the author speaking like kind of technically about the small octaves and the higher octaves and the missing note and note X and Y, and then suddenly he leaps to this paragraph about the angelic assembly. I don't get it. What's happening there, Ivan?
Well, this is like, you know, there's a whole set of scales here, isn't it? Yeah. There's a whole set of scales here to me. You're talking about this scale, like concentric.
Why is he doing this? Yeah, I mean, like, he's talking about the octave, and he's like, mi, fa, and he's a missing note, and the small octave that, and if you look at some of the technical data, it's like octaves upon octaves and all that stuff. But he's just talking like that, and then suddenly it's like, Angelic Assembly? Isn't that a different book?
Well, I think it's this book.
Well, if we assume that the author is not just rambling to be rambling.
Where are we?
We're on page 123, the first full paragraph underneath the picture there.
Thank you.
Okay. So, the work of an angelic assembly. There you go. That.
Well, I think this is, I think that he sort of suddenly jumped to the issue of purpose again, of your goals and aims in doing this work. The work of prayer absolute.
Exactly. So why are we doing it? And then, of course, we're going to get into that.
It's kind of, it's sort of like another definition or another, what would you call it? It's another perspective
on what we're
of
doing.
What a group of people
right
would
here,
do together. Yeah.
Right here, right now.
Yeah.
And now let's go to the next page. A gathering of humans, if assembled and acting in a special way, can transport itself to a higher dimension and act as a higher entity in whom human beings represent what would correspond in ourselves to internal organs and organic centrums. So let's break that apart. A gathering of humans, if assembled and acting in a special way. Can anybody tell me about that?
I had an experience this week.
Tamara says she had an experience this week.
Of getting to sync.
Getting into sync?
Getting to sync
with other members of the community. Doing a doe, a deer, a female deer. Yeah.
So we're literally working.
The do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. The idea was finding your note and your expression
within the larger
assembly.
And very
was very powerful because there was a clear energetic shift
when the group
formed from individuals into a unified presence.
Okay, so why do we come to this class, for instance? Why were we there on Monday to do that singing exercise? Were we there because, oh, it's cool to sing? For some people, that might be why. But for other people, they came not, and there's another subtlety, and this is going to get into the details of what is prayer at some point. We won't go there quite yet. But the other subtlety is, some people you go because you want the experience. You understand what I'm saying here? You go because you want the experience. That's the very, very first level of it, why you go. Maybe you go for another reason. Maybe you go because you need to fulfill a part. And now we get into what Simon had to say about resistance. But I want to point out that we are a group. We are such a group. I know it sounds weird when I say that in a certain way to point to it. Go ahead. So go ahead, Susan. Do you see what Hawk Lady said?
Well, the group of people assembled in a special way.
That's us.
That's us.
This is that special way. The elements.
Says, we have met our choir, and the choir are us.
We have met our choir, and the choir are us. Straining the English language, but made a well-made point. And that is the case. So all the reason I'm doing it, the reason I'm pointing it out, is because I'm saying, you right now notate the sensation, the elements of the sensation right here. What are the elements of the special group? They're things like, and we touched on this a few, several chapters ago. What do you do to prepare the space? Your space. You prepare your space, and particularly when you become. I've seen some people have shared their altar space. That's what where they work when they come here. So the act of coming here is they leave the world and come into this world. That's the beginning of it. Now this next paragraph, I think, is going to illustrate what Tamara was trying to talk to us about and help us see. So let's just read that real quick. If we understand our functions in relation to this body of a higher dimension as if we were parts of a radio, each of the participants in the circle could be viewed as a particular part with a specific function. Some would be resistors, resisting the flow of force in a definite way. We understand these parts, right, what a resistor is and stuff like that, to a definite degree or value. Others, condensers or capacitors, by which we mean capacitating, making possible the storage and then periodic release of force when it has gathered itself to a definitive concentration of potential. Think about that. Think about this as just as an energetic flow. Some people have the actual purpose of acting as a resistor. Is path world on? Am I saying it right? Path world. Path world provides a very definitive function in this group. But then there are capacitors, there's condensers, the storage, periodic release, and then there are diodes. Diodes is an electrical part by which energy just can flow in one direction. Can't go back the other way. So if you create a diode and you put a diode in the mix, then you're realizing that you're directing the energy only in one direction. Okay? Which we could understand to mean someone who allows force to flow in one direction but not another. Batteries provide the raw force for activation of the equipage, antenna, and ground. So those are all things. Like, some people are the antenna. Some are the ground, which keeps us grounded. That's a function that's important in, it's like the function that says, oh, wait a minute, where are we again? What's this space called? Oh, yeah, thank you. And then we begin again, all right? Which means the receptive functions, which connect the radio to the airwaves upon which the radio waves travel. Crystals, whose function is to tune the radio to different frequencies. Think of that for a second. Think of that for a second, Susan, in particular, in this moment, that it's this, that's like the sensing, the ultimate sensing mechanism, right? The crystal. It's like it says,
that
here's the
answer. Resonates with.
Exactly. It resonates. It's sensing the particular resonance that, dare I say the words, that's required at the moment. So when the group was singing on Monday, at first everybody was into it. It's just fun. Gosh, it's really interesting. Man, I love this feeling I have right now. And then at some point, people started realizing, hey, wait a minute, maybe I'm able, because I'm allowing myself to be part of this, maybe I'm helping perform a function that is somehow useful. I don't know what it is, because I don't know about stuff like that. But I know I can participate in a way whereby you, I call it surrender. You actually see surrender to the space. There's what's, in the true sense of it, as the true sense of a crystal would be to acquiesce to the proper moment of that space. We have not left the discussion of octaves here. We have not left that discussion. It's still active, it's still alive, and it's still critical to what we're talking about. So when we first read the, Dan was saying that you that exercise was that you sense the space and then you try to see where do you fit in, what is that tone that works for you. And many weeks ago when we were just reading the first reading of the Prayer Absolute, what we talked about was what particular of the lines do you respond to. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And different people says, oh, I respond to this line. I naturally respond to this. That's why I said that about Arya, with heart alive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, that was the same exercise. And so at that point, it's only upon personal self-observation you can say, yes, I respond to T, the note. So, and you allow yourself, but you observe, you have to observe enough so you can say, wow, that particular tone seems really important to me. I'm just going to go with that for a minute. And if you do that, if you allow yourself in the space that you're in, like right in the space you're in now even, to observe, what is the tone that works with for you? Resistor, capacitor, crystal, antenna, volume control. I guess that's another part of the radio. I don't know if he mentions that here. Amplifiers.
Jim H.
Yeah?
Says that crystals decode. Change amplitude. Modulated signals into audio information.
So they decode. So a crystal, someone acting like that, may sense a particular tone, a particular vibratory sensation is coming through, and then helps interpret that for the group. And then the interpretation does not necessarily mean it'll be a linear interpretation. It may just be energetic expression. Then, suddenly, the author runs back to, in order to understand the function of the octave, one must see not only the borrowed note, which is visible to us, but the much smaller octave from which it is made. It doesn't let us off the hook. He takes us into this other world that maybe there's a different functionality that using this technology that we are actually fulfilling for something. And I am really slow.
Well, Simon has something to say.
Go for it.
David. First, when I said resistance, I meant it from the point of view of the will. I had not read this paragraph, therefore I'm not sure what resistance is in the context of the paragraph?
Okay, in the context of this particular paragraph, in electricity, you probably know this as a musician, though, but, you know, there's a resistor is something that, in a sense, slows the energy down, the flow of voltage and voltage. It slows it down. There's a resistance that's actually as if it's a slowdown for some reason. That's the term here. Now, when you say the resistance in terms of the ego, there may be an exact correspondence there. If the ego is coming forth and it has a resistance, there's a lot of ways to look at that. You might go, oh, this is probably not good for me because you feel you're resisting it. But maybe the resistance is because it's time for you to inject into that momentary sensation a intentional shock that takes you to the next level. So it's notating it first. So in the functionality of an angelic assembly, all those different things are critical and important. In our daily life, as we go through our habitual cycles, we'll see them manifested differently.
Ross Dryden says, it seems to correspond whichever type of resistance one refers to.
I think you're right. I think so. I'm going to read the next paragraph, even though beside it I wrote Silverdale's name. A theoretical understanding is necessary before we attempt to work with these ideas in a practical way. Ordinary man tries continually to arrive at his fixated vision of his destination. Ordinary man tries to continually to arrive at his fixated vision. All right? Now, he does not wish to become caught between two stools. And so he urgently strives to reach the original note from which his journey began. He remains, note this term, this is terrific. This ordinary man remains a prisoner of familiarity because he does not dare enter the unknown. To someone who understands the octave, there is no unknown because everything is predictable, even passage from a lower order of creation to a higher. So if you sense, if you understand this energetic, you don't remain a prisoner of familiarity. Is that unbelievable? What a phrase. But rather you see that resistance, it might be, that push to go to another level, and that's just the way the thing works. It just works that way. And you just, but if you're sensitive, you'll say to yourself, oh, we're about to move into this higher, something's going on. I see, we're moving into a higher chamber. Okay. But what the ordinary person says, no, this is not good. I want my familiarity because I really enjoy being a prisoner of my familiarity. It's true, Dan says.
I think the common reaction is panic, fear and panic.
I guarantee you that there are times when you go into these spaces that is the first response is fear and panic when they get very intense. But if you don't go with that, suddenly the door opens. Mm-hmm. And you see the that is a portal. It's a notation of a portal at that time. And the voyager needs to understand, yes, that is a portal that has opened up, and now I'm going through it.
The space began to change.
Tamara says, when we were doing the singing together and the space began to change, she felt an ascent, and a descent.
And then I thought I was...
And she thought she was having a heart attack.
So I didn't have a mental reaction.
She didn't have a mental reaction. She didn't have an emotional reaction.
But
the human biological machine reacted very intensely to that space.
But Tamara is what she's saying is she says if she hadn't been familiar, she would have left the space. Okay, but this is a classical description of what happens when the space energetically gets that intense. We've been talking about this for a couple of years now. It's the ability to allow the level of energetic to come in that needs to come in and to fulfill, in a sense, your post in that activity of allowing the energy to come in. And to, yes, you will be burned by it. I call that the cleansing radiation. And if you're willing to sacrifice to the cleansing radiation, then listen to those words again. If you're willing to sacrifice to that, it is the you, it's the I, it's the giant ego, the ever-present, the almost ever-present giant ego. If for one moment, so Tamara went through a body reaction to this thing where she felt like she was about to have a heart attack. Others will have emotional panic. Others will just say, they'll reason their way out of it. These guys are jerks. You know, it doesn't make any sense what's going on here. I don't know what they're just.
Yeah.
And on they go. And the bottom line is that those three individuals, if they stick with the reaction, they leave the space, and actually what truly occurs, they are rejected from the space. Why are they rejected from the space? That's a question. Let's see if someone answers.
Well, Jim H. had said before, I read somewhere that it's okay to be afraid, but not okay to panic.
Perfect.
Yeah,
exactly right, Jim H.
The advice on the Hitchhiker's Guide.
And he said, the question is, where do you want to go?
Who said that?
Jim H.
Jim H., where do you want to go? That's right. And what did... Pathworld then says, no sudden moves. Those are the techniques. So making, no sudden moves. And then there's the next line. What's the next line again? Does anybody remember?
My habits
carry me through.
My habits will carry... What habits?
All those bad habits.
I have a habit of smoking a big cigar after each class. Is that the habit you mean?
I think it means the habits that you're going to form for this work.
That you are forming. We are already forming them. Tamara formed enough of a habit, so when she had that reaction, she knew as a voyager not to go with it. She instinctively knew that's not the way I want to go. I use it advisedly.
Mm-hmm.
So as voyagers, we learn other techniques. All right? Yes.
Aria, I have comments.
Hang on one second. So Jana is telling us that some people want to leave the space because it's a birthing time.
No, it isn't a want.
It's not a want. She's right.
It's instinctive.
It's that's right. They're just gone. It's like a...
But those are the behaviors in the American Book of the Dead, in the Voyager navigation. The sudden moves are the behaviors that deliver you immediately to rebirth, to take you out of the voyage. So you don't jump into a bush.
Yeah.
You don't throw yourself, you know, into a strange house because it's protected environment.
Perceived protected environment. So we never get too far away from the American Book of the Dead, though it's not directly correlated.
Well, it has a whole catalog in the back of rebirth stations.
Yeah. So, Susan, do you want to go ahead with the comments again, please?
Yes, please. Arya says their vibration is not in resonance with the vibration of the space.
Okay, good. This is the answer. Why are you rejected?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, is the
go ahead.
Resonance. Yeah.
Simon says, when we are in the work, we are in a constant battle of will. The one of the machine and the one of the essential self. It boils down to a battle of wills.
Okay.
Piangio says, these habits. And Jim H. says, a body of habits.
Okay.
Winnipeg 9 says, chapter... Run silent, run deep in parallel worlds. Day Tripper is the perfect description of this.
Okay.
And then Mark Roach, I think it is in the life of the labyrinth have a good breakdown of what the Voyager Quatrain is about.
It is.
Yeah.
So the individual... just with an objective sense, just isn't meant to be in that space. Yes. Correct. You're right. No question.
Jana has an objection to the word rejection.
You're just not there.
It's not a case of rejection.
Got it. So that it's a well put. It's a good point. It's an important point. There's not humanness in the way that occurs. It's literally there or not there. It's just. And how it occurs is a different story altogether. But I've observed places where the only way that the space, as it gets more and more intense, it is almost like a white heat to it. And people either physically leave for whatever reason, you know, they have to go pick up the kids or something, or the most unusual one is you find people suddenly they fall asleep.
Yeah, right.
And there's 25 people in the room and seven of them are awake. And some are asleep.
Well, this is a sign, right, David? This is a signpost. The chamber...
That's all.
The chamber that you have voyaged, the chamber looks the same, but it doesn't feel the same. Or it looks the same only in macro characteristics. You know, the narrative for this is in the life in the labyrinth, as somebody said.
Yeah.
Mark. You know, the traveling through the chambers.
One last comment before you go on.
Go ahead.
Jim H. He says, but the mismatch supplies an intentional shock when we go to places that scare us.
Possibly.
That sounds like again, you know, I'm not sure if this is Jim's intention, but see, to me, that sounds very close to the, I think, did you use the word opportunity, David? It's like the, you know, this thing about the intervals in the octave. I mean, that's what I've definitely seen EJ provide somebody with an opportunity, actually, in this form, scare the living crap out of them, you know, and that, so that they should obviously immediately leave the space. But if that person doesn't react in the primate way, you know, with the lower centers or with the fear reaction or whatever, it's possible to get past that interval.
That's exactly right.
It's actually a shock that's enabling somebody, and it maybe, and if that person is bounced, you know, just immediately jumps into a bush, you know, he leaves the space, has to leave, whatever. That's like saying do re mi. I'll go back to do.
That's right.
Do re mi, do re mi, do re mi. It's the law of seven or whatever you want to call it. It's like that, you know, that person has not lasted through that interval.
That's okay too,
yeah.
And that's okay that that's just not the right moment for whatever. There's just no, there's no human valuation on that one way or another.
You know, I think it happens. What is it, Jana?
She's just saying repeating opportunities.
Repeating opportunity, yeah.
Jim added something, Susan?
He added, when we are deliberate and accepted, break out of the endless loop. So
Yeah, good, okay.
When we, what was the phrase? When
and
we are.
One more from Mark Roach.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Also, unintentional shocks when we were falling into feeling rejected.
No question. Yeah. Unintentional shocks are also available to us, but they're less predictable, aren't they, by their nature? But by their unintentionality. But be awake, be aware, because they may occur, right? Don't know one way or another, but if it occurs, then you take it. Because somebody, if you're really starting to pay attention in this manner, you notice things not in terms of your ego reaction to them, but in terms of energetic shifts in the space. If something happens and normally you react to it, but then something happens and you just kind of go, interesting. Interesting. And you go, what does this mean? Let's see. And you open the door to that new portal. So we're a little bit over time, but we're going to go another few minutes, if that's okay. If someone has to spin off, then they will. But
that sounded to me like what you're talking about there is that if I'm identified or if I'm asleep, you know, if I remember to invoke presence, if I can have the self-observation happen, then that may be an unintentional shock. But I think that self-observation or the presence can be a source of that shock. Because you observe yourself, you catch yourself in sleep. You know, you catch yourself in a fugue of some kind. Oh, look, I'm panicking.
Well,
totally.
Mark has added. He said, if we can remain unattached at those times, they become choice points.
Like you did, Mark. A great point, Mark. And as like you did with when you were at the bus stop. You know, he didn't
backing off.
He backs off.
Just
reactivity, yeah. So it'll probably take us another year to get through this chapter. It seems like as slow as I'm going. But I guess I've been just so ignited that I'm digging this, okay? And I'm digging being able to apply some of these ideas of the octave to the kind of work that, energetic work that I'm familiar with. My form of work responds a great deal to sensing and sensing of these energetics. That's how it works for me. And so now in a sense, with the help and encouragement from George and Pianjo, I'm giving form to it, and it's exciting for me.
Well, the rest of the group is saying okay.
All right, so I'm not going to get in trouble.
You know, Pathrobe says it's okay to go slow. Piangio says slow is good.
Okay.
Mark says for me, anyway, it's really useful going slow.
Excellent. Then let's go slow.
Yeah, we better move.
Hot Lady loves the pace.
Yeah, okay. I think we should move according to tension.
All right, so.
One more. Mark
said
the octave has been confusing for me, and this has been helping.
Yeah,
you
same,
bet. Me too.
Same for me. This
me
is,
too, Mark.
Those posts on the blog are very interesting. Silverdale's posts on the
very good.
Enneagram. I wanted to ask David, before this evening is closed, do you want to say something about the exercise?
I do, and I want to. Did anybody post their exercise? Did anybody do the exercise? Did anybody recall that we had an exercise?
I looked at the exercise.
Aria restated it. What did she
Aria
say?
Aria restated the exercise.
What did Aria say that the exercise was, Susan?
Well, the exercise was, can you observe a series of tensions that operate and not inject intentionally and go with the flow of it?
Okay. Good. So Aria said that. So let's just sit with that. I guess it's hard to notate these things because it's a different way of thinking and observing in our life. But Tamara came up with a great example for herself with the music, you know, and that was exceptional. But it's happening all the time is the point. It's the happening in the cycle of getting up from dinner and walking over here. It happens when you sit down in the chair that you feel comfortable and safe in, or you sit down in a chair that you don't feel comfortable and safe in. It's always occurring. The tensions are, they're not good or bad. They're just existent. And we observe those tensions, and Molly Midway is a great guide for me in that, and just showing it's just an observation. Thank you. Good. So let's read what Jim H. said again, please, Susan. The last thing about the exercise that he says.
He says, I couldn't do it. Observed tensions, but intervened to release them. Needs
okay.
more work.
This is the key of the reason I gave the exercise, is because that's what we mostly do. Now, this guy, this Jim H., he's like always on. He's constantly working with this material. This is a strong worker. And he has the strength to confess to this group that part because he's not attached to it. And that is a moment of freedom for Jim H., that moment of confession right there. So what happens? He's noticed the tension, and what he did? He just offloaded it, you know, and went and had a donut. Makes sense to me. But if you want to do something different, as Harry was saying early on about being in the monkey mind and monkey world, if you want to do something different, we have to be a little bit different and inject something. So let's just sit with the exercise another week. I'll send out another reminder over the weekend, and I'll remind ourselves of the exercise again. And then sometime during the day on Wednesday before the class, we'll remember the exercise and try to do it before the class starts.
Well, we do have three responses to the exercise. Would you like them?
Hang on. do you guys, I'm asking everybody here too, because everybody has their own schedules. Is it okay for us to go another 15 minutes? How about everybody online? If we reveal the exercise, we're going to get into, we'll just do one. If we get into, we're going to get into it a teeny bit though, okay? So if people say it's okay to do that, Susan?
Yeah, they're saying okay.
Then you have the burden, Susan.
All righty then.
Of picking one.
Oh, well.
Hang on, yes.
I can't pick one.
Okay, thank you. Well, you have to pick one. That's your job.
Okay, then Aria.
Okay.
Aria says, I got into a situation where I felt a lot of tension and heat and had to just sit in it. Also, just today, a situation came up with students that I felt the urge to correct it, but didn't just let it go and carried on.
Ah, okay. So those are two different events. That's how I'm hearing that, right?
Yes.
Two different events. That's too much.
Okay, the first part then.
Let's just do the first part. This stuff is big stuff, okay, guys? These are big energetics that are coming through. These are lifetimes of energetics that are moving through us, and this is an example of it. And this lifetime of energetics is the karmic patterns that are revealing themselves through this simple exercise of observing the pattern of energetics. So say it again. Say the first part again, please, Susan.
I got into a situation where I felt a lot of tension and heat and had to just sit in it.
Okay. Aria, do you want to expand slightly on that since you're now in the hot seat? I got into a situation.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. No. Speak up.
Well, there was a situation that came up recently with a friend, and we had a misunderstanding. And there was this moment of tension, and I could feel the heat in my body. I could feel that awkwardness and the heat rise, and this urge of, oh crap, what did I do? And just all of this tension. And I'm, you know, the patterns, I'm seeing it all. And all I could do in that moment was just sit there and feel that heat and the awkwardness, and I just watched it. I didn't try to correct it or backpedal. I just sat in that heat of the moment and watched myself and watched how it felt. And it was
okay.
Uncomfortable, but, you know, it was...
Part of it is, so you're in there with somebody and you had a disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
And in your disagreement, you were, of course, right. And they're not here, so we can just say, okay? You were right, and they were wrong. It's as simple as that. Case solved. Or not.
Where'd the heat come from?
Exactly. And that's the question is, the heat came from somewhere. In that cycle of energetics, you bumped into something. That was an example of this allowing. Something came through. And as Jana was saying, it was just an opportunity. So go ahead.
Well, all I could do was instead of defending or backpedaling or trying to appease the situation, I recognized this heat came up And I wanted to jump into that bush, as Ivan keeps saying, you know, hi. But I just sat in it, and I just listened, and I just let them, you know, I didn't intervene. I just kind of sat back and watched it happen. And it really, it was a very different perspective, and just by watching it and letting, you know, the things unfold around me, it just kind of shifted on its own, I guess. And, you know, I did not continue the same pattern.
Let's rewind a little bit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, how long ago was this?
About a week and a half ago.
Okay, good. Not when you were like 7 or something.
No, it's last week. It was about a week ago. In the last week that we had an assignment, so.
Okay, so it was about a week ago. Now, can you recall that moment again?
Yes.
And then when you were in that situation, can you describe the flow of energy and where it took place? Just in a general term, in you?
In me. I would say the flow of energy with the heat probably started somewhere around the middle, like the gut area or the solar plexus, and it just rose right up probably to the throat area.
Yep.
And it was like a wave of heat. And then when I chose not to intervene or inject that intentionality to it, when I just let it go and observe it and let it flow, it just kind of, I don't know if it would be dissipated, just kind of dissolved or poofed, you know, it just was gone.
What happened? Anybody?
It just kind of went, you know,
why
outward.
Kind of went outward. What happened?
That's the best I could describe it.
Okay.
I could feel the release, and it became very interesting to watch.
Ah. Okay. So it
became, sounds like an attitude change.
It sounds like an attitude change, but it became, what a strange phrase suddenly. It became interesting to watch rather than she's wrong, I'm right, you know, I want to kill that person, or he's right, I'm right, you know. So what did Jim H. say, Susan?
The last thing he said was changed chambers.
She changed chambers. Okay. Now I'm gonna slow us all down a little bit. How did she change chambers? What occurred?
She dropped her expectation.
Dropped her expectations? How do you do that? Observation.
Go from active to a passive. In that moment, you pull back.
So the individual, Arya, was in, identified with it, and then defend it.
Disengage.
She disidentified. She then was no longer attached to the identification. Now, this is a really important process. So she became, for somehow, and I'm underlining that somehow, and I'm putting quotation marks, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, she was able to disengage from the identification. At that moment. And go ahead. But not first, at first. That was it, what happened. It was the result. Because she was no longer identified as Jen is saying, she was able to, in a sense, give it permission to flow. It's a very beautiful way of putting it. And once that occurred, she wasn't invested in it. And she had a whole new spot of objectivity that she could stand in. And I maintain that the reason she was able to do that in part is because she did have the Voyager's habit. It's in a sense the energy got so high for her that instead of reacting and bringing out her six gun and shooting, the energy got that she went to the awakened state.
Presence, invocation of
and
presence.
And therefore, presence came through.
Self-remembering.
She had self, big S, remembering at that time. Repeat that.
Did she have a moment?
M.A. Did she have a
moment? A point in time when she felt, what? I'm sorry.
She could go into
the anger, but she wasn't in it. Is that right?
So, Aria,
yeah.
When you think back on this and you rewind, and this is not an easy observation. Was there a moment when you noticed that you were at a crossroads where you could go into the argument or go a different path?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Excellent. If we can begin to see that moment, that's a huge step. It's an enormous step. I recall a moment when we had virtually infinite community meetings about infinite number of things. And I remember walking into one where one of my former wives was carrying on in a particular way and, you know, heating up the space with her particular point of view. And I remember very clearly and distinctly deciding to go into ego and fight. And it was just remarkable to watch. But it was like presented right in front of me. There it is. I chose the lower path. And
that's identification. Right.
Boom. And believe me, the energetics went to a different level.
Yeah, right.
So, this is a critical thing that Aria was able to observe, and a great question from M.A. Can we observe that moment when literally the mentation arises and the truth is before us and we can choose a path to go on? And in a sense, it's not a willful thing in the way we think of will. But it's like you have a choice to go one way or another, and it's a navigational point. That's a navigational point. I want to point out that this is a true gift to the entire group to share something of that much detail, Aria. Do you have any other questions about it that you'd like to bring up, or are there other questions that people would like to share about it?
There are comments.
Go for it.
Well, I'll start at the end and go back, I guess. She didn't react because she was awake and had enough will, the good kind, to apply the shock and stay.
Okay.
Jim says, The birth of conscious will. Mark says, let go of an expectation. She surfed the wave rather than trying to push the water.
Beautiful. Well, very nicely put. That's
yeah,
what I think.
Said, yeah, I like it too.
Very
you
nice.
You said there was some disassociation.
Yep. The burden of beginning to observe this sort of thing is that ever so gradually you begin to realize you have a hell of a lot more choice than you realize. And a lot more is on your back. It isn't those guys out there doing it to you all the time. Aria?
Yes.
Do you have any more questions that you'd like to ask or anything else about it that you'd like to bring up at the moment?
I don't think so.
Okay. Good. I think it's, and I appreciate that kind of sharing. Next week, as we slowly go through this mountainous chapter, we're going to talk about a real question. And Aria has presented a real question for us. And all of us benefited from it. Everybody knows this experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's had it. And you think, oh, gosh, well, you know, why should I share? It's a little embarrassing. But when you share it in this space with this group and this community, that's what you get back. You get a gold back. Okay? So that's complete. Then why don't we just call this particular part complete then? And thank everybody. I want to thank everybody for coming, everybody that's here. Very, very helpful. Thank you so much. And everybody that came online, and Susan, for your hard work and focus, thank you so much. And Silverdale, for your encouragement. So thank everybody for coming, and we look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at the same time. Good night.
Thanks, David and Ivan, for leading us.
Thank you.